Welcome to Looking at Lucasfilm, the podcast with a different perspective on the world of Star Wars, Indiana Jones, and all of the other entities that George Lucas, Kathleen Kennedy, and Dave Filoni, as well as the rest of the team at Lucasfilm, have dreamed up over the past 40 years. I'm entertainment writer Jim Hill, and my co-host, the one, the only, Dan Z. He and I are recording this on, what is it? This is Monday, November 30th. Is that correct, or?
Yes, it sure is.
Okay, so Cyber Monday. Did we do any of our holiday shopping over, you know, the past couple of days?
You know, we've done a lot over the past couple of weeks because so many things have been available because of the coronavirus. They've had a lot of Black Friday prices for a while. So we've been doing our fair share of keeping the UPS and FedEx people very busy.
Yes, we have them trundle up and down the driveway here as well. I do want to point out, folks, by the way, there's a great bargain right now going on of an Amazon. I know we've talked repeatedly in the past about Dan's book, the Star Wars book, which you wrote with Pablo Hidalgo and, I'm blanking his name. Help me out here.
Cole Horton.
Okay. Well, it turns out, remember, folks, this book, this is wonderful, the book. Debuted on Amazon for $25 when it was first released back on October 20th. Right now, again, Cyber Monday, Black Friday, whatever it is, Amazon is selling it for $16.64. It's a third off, you know, and you still get, you know, all those wonderful stories. And now, mind you, I could justify spending. I already have my copy, you know, and easily justify spending the $16.64. What I'm having trouble justifying, Dan, is the Star Wars archive, the 1999 to 2005 from Passion. You've seen this, right? You're aware that it's arriving on what, December 13th, right?
Oh yeah, and you and I have talked about it quite a bit, and it's got some stunning reveals about George's plans for the sequel trilogy.
See, that's the thing. I'm you know, that's what I want to hear, because I really they've got it marked down. It's only $152, down from $200, and it's 600 pages. You know, but again, I'm the flinty New Englander, so I'm trying to convince Santa, aka Nancy, that I've been extra good this year, and so far it's not working, Dan.
So she knows me too well.
She does. Okay, so speaking of the holidays, I wanted, you know, you were able to sort of hint that you had seen the Lego Holiday Special, which debuted on Disney Plus back on November 17th. But now, you know, everybody's had a chance to take a look at it. This wonderful thing that was done by Atomic Cartoons, the Lego Group, as well as the Lucasfilm. So did you have any particular favorite moments out of it? Or?
Well, if I have a quibble, it's that the majority of the really funny stuff was revealed in the trailer, but that's kind of the standard, really.
That is true.
I think what I love the most is that it actually had some nice pathos to it. It took Rey and kind of put her in a Marty McFly situation. Mm-hmm. And then it has her again kind of confront what her role is in the universe, but this time from the perspective of a teacher, mm-hmm. and her relationship with Luke at different ages in his life and how she handles things and just sort of the thrilling nature of it. Mm-hmm. I thought was just really well done. And of course it's very fun and light. I think maybe one of my favorite moments or standout moments, because it's hard to pick just one, but I would say it's when Darth Vader meets Darth Vader on Hoth. That was pretty entertaining.
That was pretty cool.
What about you?
Well, you know, I have to admit, I really like the writing, because if you think about it, this was a hard Venn diagram to pull off, because it really doesn't have a mean bone in its body. It's a very affectionate send-up. But at the same time, there are enough truly inside jokes so that, you know, I mean, a casual Star Wars fan could enjoy this, but, you know, somebody who's genuinely hardcore, you know, could, there were enough jokes in there look, you know, only the mer people are going to get that one. And at the same time, how can you not love a holiday special that ends with Yoda dressed like Sam the Snowman from Rudolph?
Yes, and it had nothing to do with the real holiday special, so that's always good too.
This is true, And, you know, in fact, I loved that they never identified them as Lumpy and Chewbacca's wife's name again? Oh, dang.
Therese? I really don't remember.
Okay. But at the same time, you know, I gotta love the amount of serving the corporate master that was. I mean, did you notice that they had tip-yip for their holiday meal, which again you can only get at Star Wars Galaxy's Edge. And likewise, I love that when Darth Vader gave the Emperor his coffee mug, you know, I had to look in all the stores at Blackfire Outpost. So it was like, yeah, okay, you made the people at Disney happy. So thumbs up there. But I couldn't help but notice that in sort of the same window of time that we got Lego Star Wars Holiday Special, we also got, now I'm not going to say it's a whole episode of Star Wars Detours, because it was really just a sketch, you know, a five, six minute long sketch that bubbled up on YouTube over the weekend. Did you happen to catch that? Or,
you know, for some reason I chose to watch my Chicago Bears painfully embarrassing themselves yet again on national television against their rival, the Green Bay Packers. So I didn't watch it yet, but some people I know who did see it, so that they thought it was really fun.
Well, you know, it's, for me, Star Wars Detours is a fascinating story. You know, in that, I mean, first of all, I have to ask, it was officially announced at Star Wars Celebration 6 in Orlando. That was one of the celebrations that you attended, right?
I did not attend Celebration 6. That was the last one when I thought to myself, I've got to start going to these things.
Okay. Because this is the one that's held in Orlando. August 16th and the 19th of 2012. And, you know, they bring Seth Green on stage and in fact, what's interesting is you can watch a lot of the panel on YouTube. And they basically describe the fact that the folks that do Robot Chicken and George Lucas sort of reached out to one another, because the folks at Lucasfilm really enjoyed the Star Wars-related sketches and the Indiana Jones-related sketches that were done, for this Adult Swim show. And, you know, they talked about maybe doing a collaboration. And, you know, this is what came out of it, Star Wars Detours. But and the conceit of the show, it was going to be set, between the events of Star Wars Episode 3 and Episode 4. And they really brought the A-team in. I mean, what's weird is if you look at the vocal cast, Dan, Anthony Daniels is there as C-3PO.
Yeah.
Billy Dee Williams is there as Lando. They even bring Ahmed Best in to do Jar Jar Binks. And this is, you know, think about it. How long has it been? You know, it's been almost more than a decade at this point since Phantom Menace. And, you know, and so they produce 39 episodes, two seasons worth of shows. They write scripts for an additional 62 episodes. So the plan was that there were going to be three more seasons of the show. But honestly, just it's 6 weeks after they officially announced the show with Star Wars Celebration 6 that news breaks that the Walt Disney Company is going to be buying Lucasfilm for $4 billion and change. Star Wars Detours is the show that gets kind of caught in the lurch by this. Because, you know, Disney takes a look at the finished episodes and, you know, they admire the craft. I mean, it's decent CG and the writing's good. But at the same time, Disney's paid $4 billion for this IP, which they want a return on. And the belief in house at Disney is that this perhaps is the wrong way for Disney to launch its ownership of Lucasfilm. They feel like, you know, in fact, if you remember that period, Dan, you know, wasn't it Star Wars Rebels that made it first out the door?
Yes, it was.
Okay. And, you know, you think about it. well animated show, but very, you know, I mean, and very entertaining, but also, you know, very respectful, very serious of the mythology and the characters and the like. And then, you know, that was first out the door. And then, of course, we got, you know, The Force Awakens. And this show has been since March of 2013. You know, in fact, the phrase that was used, it was never canceled. It was just postponed. And at some point, this will come out, supposedly. And but now we're 7 years later, and you know, and what's, you know, honestly, if you take sort of the 10,000 foot view of it, I think honestly that Star Tours Detours is more representative of George's own sense of humor, especially when it comes to Star Wars. I mean, face it, George. You know, George supported the Family Guy, you know, Star Wars parody episodes.
Yeah.
Likewise, again, he not only enjoyed watching the Robot Chicken sketches in a very memorable one that actually sends up George, you know, the Comic-Con experience. George himself, you know, voices George Lucas, where he's being chased through Comic-Con by a mob of crazed Star Wars fans. Wonderfully funny sketch, though, by the way, folks, worth checking out. But
it is one of the better ones for sure.
Yeah. And but yeah, it's, you know, it's, so it's interesting that right now this one sketch bubbled up, because in the same window of time, I don't know if you saw, there was evidently a Disney Plus presentation done for the South American market that somebody took a shot of the screen during, you know, somebody asked, okay, so what's the future of Disney Plus? And they were like, oh, okay, let us show you what the future of Disney Plus is. And it was Disney 18 Plus. Have you heard about this, Dan?
No, I have not.
Yeah. Well, remember, when Disney acquired 20th Century Fox, it got a lot of R-rated material. It also, and let's face it, Touchstone and Hollywood Pictures, over, you know, the many years that you know those studios were up and running at Disney, they made a number of R-rated films as well, and none of these to date have showed up on Disney Plus. And the thinking going forward is they have this amazing Fox library, but they have not used all of it, and they haven't used all this adult material. And when I say adult, I mean adult themes, you know, adult, you know, based stories, that sort of thing. And so evidently, we're about a year or so out from the official launch of this, but the notion is that when you buy a subscription to Disney Plus, you will have the option of also having a subscription to Disney 18 Plus, but it will be a password-encoded, age-sensitive system. And in that, you know, your children will, in theory, not be able to get access to this material. They'll need mom or dad's password to get it. And I, as I understand it, that was part of the South American presentation, explaining that, you know that we've done what we believe is a very good job of vaulting this material. And, you know, that again, we will now be able to use the entire film library. So, But that's it. You know, I don't mean to be critical of Disney and what they've done with Star Wars, because, I mean, just today, Dan, the National Research Organization came out with its findings about the top franchises in entertainment right now. And it turns out that The Mandalorian, Marvel's Avengers, and Netflix's Stranger Things are the top entertainment franchises in the market right now.
They're my absolute favorites, for sure. I love that.
And, you know, what's fascinating about that is, face it, The Mandalorian, at this point, is only, it's less than 13 months old. You know, you know, none of us knew anything about Mando or the child or that sort of thing. So this has all happened in 1 year's time. You know, and, you know, again, walking through Target and seeing the now walls and walls of the child merch, it's just, I remember last year where everybody was like, I want something, give me something. And it's like, I think the only thing they could bring to market quickly were the child socks.
Yeah. Now we've got everything short of the child suppositories.
Please don't give them that idea.
Did you know that The Mandalorian is the first Disney Plus show to make Nielsen's streaming top 10 list?
Wow. No, I did not know that.
Through Variety.
Okay. Well, now you see that. So, again, it's a hit. And we, on our last episode, we talked about, I want to say, the first three episodes. And now we've had two very interesting ones drop, The Siege and The Jedi. And the English teacher, you, the one who has great insights into narrative, and what are your thoughts about these two?
So I think they're both really, really good episodes. I like The Siege a little bit more just because I just like that we got to see a different side of Greef Karga and sort of see Carl Weathers come into his own, both as a director and as a character actor through this. Mm-hmm. I thought it was great fun. And then the sucker punch reveal of why the Empire wants the child's blood specifically. Mm-hmm. The fact that there's a little bit of ambiguity plus some reference to Dark Troopers from the Star Wars Legends line is great. And then the one for the Jedi. Well, let's talk about that, and then we'll talk about the Jedi. What do you think about the Siege?
I have to admit, the Siege had some beautifully staged action stuff. I especially love, as the vehicle is making its way, back to safety, and the three TIE fighters are coming down at it, and it looks like all is lost because the gun has been blown out. And that one of my favorite moments out of all of Star Wars history is, that moment where the Millennium Falcon dives out of the sun and saves Luke. And the fact that we got a variation on that moment that all seemed lost, and then Mando was suddenly there and able to take out the three. But what I especially loved about it was what happened next. Was when they had done sort of the loop-de-loop, and we cut back to the child in its seat who's eating the little blue cookies that he swiped from the kid in the classroom, and as any parent will remembers that moment you turn around and your child has barfed in the child's seat, and now it's like, oh, okay. And think about it, you have the characters that have just been saved, come back, let's go to the bar. And it's like, no, I got to clean up the car and I got things to do. And it's just sort of like, and it was Mando as the good dad that, it's like, I would love to go out drinking with my friends, but I have to clean up my son. I have to clean up the car. And then I got this other errand I got to run. And I want to take credit for this, and I'm blanking the name of the writer that did it, but there was this wonderful piece this week that pointed out that one of the things that's really great about The Mandalorian is that it's the first, think about it, over the course of, the entire, Skywalker saga, we saw in various, permutations, dysfunctional father-son type relationships.
Yes, I'm actually going to bring that up, and I'm glad that you did, because of course Luke and Anakin is pretty clear. Mm-hmm. And then The Force Awakens, mm-hmm. obviously, murdering your father is a big no-no. But also the fact that Han Solo is essentially an absentee father. I mean, mm-hmm. he really is, and people don't really talk about that a lot, but the way it's presented, he certainly is. Mm-hmm. This is actually an example of a healthy father-son dynamic, and especially as a father of three sons, I really am grateful that we get to see it like this.
Well, no, absolutely, absolutely. But at the same time, not to shift too quickly here to the Jedi, but over the course of that story, Mando is putting the needs of the child first. And you could, there's that wonderful moment where he goes into the ship to collect the child to wake him up, to basically deliver him to Ahsoka. And just, the fact that this is killing him, but this is what, is best for the child. And mm-hmm. it's one of these things where it's like, this is so rare in the Star Wars universe. But speaking of which, we shifted over to the Jedi, and obviously, again, everybody's talking about it. What did you think of Rosario Dawson's take on Ahsoka?
So I've thought about this a lot, and I know a lot of people like it. A lot of people certainly aren't sure what to think, and I'm kind of in that boat too. I'm just not sure where I'm at with this thing, mm-hmm. because it's I think that she's an excellent actress. I think the transition that they did from animation to live action, the makeup, the way Rosario Dawson carries herself. Mm-hmm. I mean, literally from folding her arms to the way she very gracefully extends her palm and then her fingers to let that knob off the top of the Razor Crest ship float mm-hmm. to the child, or Grogu, I should say, mm-hmm. is really remarkable. Her mannerisms are very much intact, but it's just very, very hard for me for it not to be Ashley Eckstein. And I have no idea what went into the decision or if Ashley even cares, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I have no idea. I know it's a business. Mm-hmm. But it is very hard for me because I mean, I don't know as Ashley Eckstein, and I know her. I mean, I wouldn't say we're necessarily friends because she's a pretty busy person, but every time I do see her, she always says, hello, Dan, comes up and gives me a hug. And she's very, very gracious mm-hmm. and kind. I just think she's a really good person and a great ambassador for Star Wars. And I wish that she got to bring Ahsoka to live action. And so I'm having a hard time with that. And mm-hmm. someone said to me, what about Alden Ehrenreich as Han Solo? Did you have a problem with that? No, I didn't. I had no problem with that. And everyone knows how much I love Harrison Ford. But for whatever reason, this transition didn't grab me the way that I wanted it to. Part of that is because we knew that it was going to be called The Jedi before it actually aired. I had anticipated it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, 12 years of seeing a character animated before it goes to live action also makes it hard to live up to that hype. I'm reminded of initial reaction to The Phantom Menace or The Force Awakens, because Star Wars fans have a hard time because our expectations are so high of meeting those. So I think it's a little tricky. I mean, I'm certainly not going to pan it. I think it's very well done for what we have, but it's hard for me to disassociate from Ashley Eckstein. But what about you?
I get that. I get that. I have to admit, the siege was so entertaining. Like, so, you know, and to be honest, this has been a great season so far, you know, for The Mandalorian. So, you know, can't wait for this one. And it just, I mean, I felt like, well, first of all, there was a lot of exposition, yes. You know, and it's, you know, I think Dave Filoni was the one mentioning that it was Jon Favreau who came to him with the name Grogu, you know, Grogu. And I'm sorry, but, you know, Dan, I'm old. I remember Gorgo, the 1961 British film that riffs on Godzilla. Have you ever seen this?
Oh, it's, yes. I know exactly what you mean.
Okay. So it was like, what?
Similar, I guess. Kind of.
Yeah, well, but it's one of these things, really. You didn't Google the name? And, oh, well, there might be a slight confusion.
What do you think about, because I have stuff to say about Grogu, but what do you think about Rosario Dawson?
I thought overall she did a solid job, but at the same time, I felt like the poor woman was saddled with so much exposition. Mm-hmm. You know, in fact, that bit at the end where Mando comes to surrender the child and she's like, I can't take it, you know, but, you know, go to this temple, put the child on the stone. Some other Jedi might find it. And it was one of these things where it's like, oh, you know, this poor woman who's saddled with, let me move your story forward. Now I want to stress here that I trust Jon Favreau. I trust Dave Filoni. I know this is going to pay off. But it was, for me, it was, you know, just sort of like, I worried that this is the moment that, you know, and that coupled with the fact that the fight, you know, in the garden ended, you know, with where is Admiral Thrawn? And it's just one of these things where I worry that this is the exact moment that The Mandalorian goes from being that show that a casual Star Wars fan can walk into and just enjoy because it's so well done and the characters are so compelling to, you know, this is one of these things where it's like, hang on, I got to go find out who Admiral Thrawn is. Hang on, I got to go, you know, find out about this temple. And, you know, there are shows that were hits that preceded The Mandalorian, shows like Lost and The X-Files, that same thing. They were hits, you know, that a casual viewer, you know, viewer could walk into and enjoy. And what concerns me is, again, for the exact same reason that people began to walk away from X-Files and Lost, because the narrative got too dense. You know, you had to know, for example, who were, you know, what dark troopers were, or, you know, that sort of thing. I just worry that, you know, don't make this too complex. It's wonderful the way it is right now. And I realize that, you know, but at the same time, Dave Filoni is a Star Wars, a dictionary with feet. And he has all sorts of characters and worlds he wants to fold in. And I don't want to discourage that either. But I just, it's like, just remember there were people who are just being introduced to this world that, you know, maybe don't have their copy yet of, you know, Dan's Star Wars books and can't, you know, go to the dictionary at the back and the dark troopers. What are dark troopers?
Well, what a great reason to get the Star Wars book to fill in the gaps.
Well, there we go. Okay. But, so that's our second plug for tonight, Dan. I just want to point that out.
We're just getting started. It's going to be a drinking game pretty soon.
There we go.
I love what you said, and I think that's very important. I don't worry about that as much because history is full of great TV shows and movies that make references to things that are in the mythology that are later revealed in the stories, in the shows themselves. So people may think, oh, here's something new, and they can just sit tight and let it come to them when it does, if it does on the screen on Disney Plus. So it could be that. If anything, I feel like the majority of this season has been all about the secret guest stars, and they almost eclipsed The Mandalorian. They almost eclipsed Din Djarin sometimes, where he sort of takes the back seat. I mean, in The Siege, there's a good 5 to 7 minutes of action where The Mandalorian isn't even there, and that's new. And I just want to make sure that we remember this show is called The Mandalorian, not The Brave and the Bold, where we throw in extra guest stars all the time. That to me is a little more something that I wouldn't say I'm concerned, but I'm aware of it.
Well, now I'm going to feel really self-conscious for bringing this up. But there is a Disney cameo in the Jedi. In fact, Governor Wing.
Cool. Yeah, I love this. This is not.
Yeah, that it turns out that the gentleman who Mando goes to and has his two kids outside and please don't talk to me, you know, and who eventually, you know, Ahsoka, you know, hands over or the people of the colony elect as their official. That is Disney legend and former Imagineer Wing T. Chow, who did some of the best architecture on Disney property. And I guess, as it turns out, he's this huge Star Wars fan. And again, this was kind of fulfilling a lifelong dream for him to be in a Star Wars project. So it was one of these things where I'm watching and it's like, I know that face. Why do I know that face? And it was like, because you know how sometimes you'll see somebody out of context and can't place them? And it's like, you know, I've talked to this guy, you know, multiple times over the past 20 years, but it's always in relation to, well, the convention center is over there and the, you know, the kitchens are over there. And it's just to see him in, you know, in the Star Wars universe was just kind of startling. So, but still very cool. But again, Dan, you know, we've seen 5 of the 8 episodes for the season so far, and there are just 3 left. And again, I don't know if you saw what Lucasfilm executive Hal Hinkle tweeted out just today, but this is what he says about the next 3 episodes. Y'all in for a roller coaster these last 3 episodes. So I can't help but think that tracking device is going to come into play sometime fairly soon.
We're going to have quite a little Thanksgiving table with all of this cast of characters that we've got going here.
Yeah.
I'm going to miss it when it's gone this season. I mean, every Friday morning, Mason and I wake up extra early. I get our breakfast ready, get my coffee ready, wake him up. We go into the basement and turn on the show, and it's just fun little, we call it our Mando mornings. It's just fun little father-son bonding moments that we're having the best time with.
Well, I do have a bit of good news for you then. I don't know if you've heard that in much the same way that Disney Gallery, The Mandalorian, how we got to see season one made, they have made Disney Gallery, The Mandalorian season two. We'll start to get to see that in early 2021. So
it's great. It's great.
Once again, get to peek behind the scenes. And speaking of peeking behind the scenes, we have some Willow news, which we'll get to on the second half of today's show.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And we're back. Okay, Dan, so I think we talked, if not the last episode, the episode before that, about the news about the new Willow limited series.
That's right. That's
coming to Disney Plus. And it seemed to be picking up speed. Just today, we got news about members of the cast. Did you see this at all? Or
I did. There's some great news here.
Yeah. All right. So we have Ellie Bamber, who folks might know from the show Nocturnal Animals. Kaylee Spani from the Netflix film The Craft Legacy. And finally, Erin Kellyman, who... at first I couldn't place her, but she's in Solo.
She's Enfys Nest. That's right.
There we go. Yeah, she's one of the rebels who actually, persuades Solo, to sort of effectively change sides. But these three young ladies are the female leads for Willow, and we actually have a little teeny tiny bit of story. The official storyline for the show hasn't been released yet, but according to the circulated casting sheets, the Willow television series for Disney Plus is going to revolve around a group on a mission to save a kidnapped prince. The members of the team include Dove, whose backstory resembles that of Willow in that, Dove is a kitchen maid who proves that she's the chosen one as she sets out on this journey. She is joined by Kit, who's played by Ms. Spani. She is the princess whose twin brother has been abducted, destined to be a leader and ultimately the queen. And finally, Kellyman plays Jade, a servant who is Kit's best friend and moral compass. And she is on her way to be the best young warrior in the village. And they have not cast this role yet, but they are looking for an older gentleman who is supposed to echo Val Kilmer's character from the original Willow movie, in that he's going to be a thief and a liar who joins the quest in exchange for getting out of prison. So I give a little bit better sense of where this story is going to go.
That is similar to how you and Drew Taylor met, I think.
This is true. This is true. If he hadn't gotten me out of jail, I don't know what I'd be doing.
We need to be on the resume that they're willing to give playful jabs to Drew Taylor, whoever the new co-host is.
I will make sure to note that during the auditions. So, and speaking of auditions, okay, so as the story goes, George Lucas had seen this 6'7" tall weightlifter when he appeared in Stanley Kubrick's Clockwork Orange, and it's like, ooh, I want to work with that guy. And so this guy goes in for the audition, and George, as he tells the story, George said to me, "You've got a choice between two characters in this movie. There's a character called Chewbacca, who's a huge teddy bear, or alternatively is the main villain of the piece." And this actor said, "Well, there's no choice then. There is there. Thank you very much. I'll take the villain's piece," because everybody remembers the villain. And certainly all Star Wars fans remember David Prowse, who sadly we lost just this past weekend. Can you talk about, you know, the first time you saw Star Wars and Vader comes striding up the corridor? What did you think, Dan?
Well, I just remember I was five, but mm-hmm. I just remember being just sort of stunned by this massive presence. And mm-hmm. and I'm glad we're talking about David Prowse, because while clearly the voice, mm-hmm. James Earl Jones of Vader, gets so much of the credit, and rightfully so, the gravitas, the weight, the presence, the figure that is Darth Vader, we owe that to David mm-hmm. Prowse. I mean, he's a very, very significant person in the creation of this story. And also, by the way, not related to looking at Lucasfilm, he helped to get Christopher Reeve in shape for the original Superman.
That's true. That is true. Mind you, that was before he shot Star Wars. But it's interesting to bring up his physicality, because George Lucas, just over the past day or so, wrote a tribute to David. And he said David brought a physicality to Darth Vader that was essential for the character. He made Vader leap off the page and onto the big screen mm-hmm. with an imposing stature and movement performance that to match the intensity and undercurrent of Vader's presence. David was up for anything and contributed to the success of what would be a memorable, tragic figure. And, you know, and let's face it, a lot of the reason that he was able to do that was he was, you know, what is it? He was a champion weightlifter. I think he was all national for like 3 years in a row.
Sounds, I think that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. And certainly being able to handle heavy weights and such came in handy when you played Darth Vader, because between the outfit, which is made of fiberglass and leather, weighed 40 pounds all by itself. And then there was the helmet. David, in his memoir from 2005, Straight from the Force's Mouth, by the way, I love that title. Once the mask was fitted, I was virtually blind. And the heat generated by the suit obeyed the laws of physics and traveled upwards straight into the mask, and which immediately missed up the eyepieces, which was inconvenient to say the least, but not an insurmountable problem as long as I was able to look through the triangular cutout beneath the mask's nose molding and use it as a spy hole. So think about it. He's doing all of this, you know, virtually blind, looking out through the nose, you know.
You know, I don't know that I can say that it's the same thing, but when I got out of high school, I worked at Chuck E. Cheese, and I dressed up as Chuck E. Cheese a couple of times. I could barely see out of that thing.
I think David might have had a little tougher. Now, interesting. You mentioned, you know, just a moment ago about, you know, face it, when you look at Darth Vader, you have to look at the sum of all parts. I mean, you got David's physicality, you've got James Earl Jones' voice, which, by the way, is augmented by Ben Burtt. In fact, neither James Earl Jones or David Prowse did the breathing thing. That was evidently Ben Burtt working with a scuba gear regulator. And then let's not forget about the fact that, you know, when it came time for, Darth Vader to, say, battle with Obi-Wan Kenobi, that's when Bob Anderson, the stunt double, stepped in, who I want to say was a fencing master.
That's right.
And then let's not forget, in fact, you know, that I remember tacking with David about this. I was lucky enough to meet him at a Comic-Con, I want to say, in 2011, 2012. But you know, he was so looking forward. He'd read the script for, what it was originally, Revenge of the Jedi, and saw the scene went, oh my God, Darth Vader's going to get a mask. Now, finally, people will finally get to see my face. And no, it was Sebastian Shaw. Because George wanted that kind of, David said something to the effect of wanted a Humpty Dumpty look. The fact that this man had been trapped inside of this face or this mask for so many years. And so, you know, that this is he, you know, outward he was very powerful, and inside you saw this, you know, soft boiled egg of a man. But again, it took all of those people to create the Darth Vader we know today. And, you know, and let's not forget about, you know, Hayden's, you know, contribution with young Anakin Skywalker. Sure. But you know, it's just fascinating to me, you know, that David talked about, you know, for the entire film, the original A New Hope, he received $7,000, or the English pounds equivalent of that, to play that part in that movie. And now, mind you, the checks got better as it got to Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi. Unfortunately, George and David kind of had a falling out. Actually, it happened supposedly during the production of Empire, where somehow word got out about you know, the whole Luke, I am your father storyline, and George mistakenly thought that it had come from David, and which, when you think about it, I don't quite understand how that could have happened, because wasn't David handed like an entirely different set of dialogue, you know, when he actually shot the scene with Mark Hamill?
Yeah, the J.W. Rensler making of The Empire Strikes Back covers this a lot, and how David Prowse was, he just had kind of a way, sort of like Mark Ruffalo, but even worse, of just revealing things well before it was supposed to come out, and they had a hard time sort of curtailing that.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting is that the reporter that broke the story years later flat out admitted, look, David didn't do this. I got this from somebody else on the production who I don't want to burn and reveal, but it wasn't David. But by then the damage was done, and Lucasfilm and Prowse were kind of on the outs for a number of years. But at the same time, you know, the interesting thing is that if you talked with David about, you know, and he'd done a lot of stuff over his career, you know, face it, we talked about him being the Stanley Kubrick, you know, Clockwork Orange. You know, he made a number of Hammer films. In fact, it was kind of interesting. He made Frankenstein, and I think The Monster from Hell. But he played the monster, and Dr. Frankenstein was played by Peter Cushing. So, you know, when it came time for them to work together on the set of New Hope, it was, you know, it was old home week. It's like, oh, David, lovely to see you, you know, and then, you know, just charge right in. But honestly, if you ask Prowse flat out, you know, over the course of his career, the thing he was proudest of, it was actually being the Green Cross Code Man, who starred in a series of commercials and billboards and advertisements. This is in the 1960s and 70s, this was what taught young English children how to properly cross the street. And the fact that, you know, he would go out in public, and again, remember, you know, when he dressed as Vader, nobody knew who he was. But in the UK, when he'd go out in public, it's like, oh my God, it's the Green Cross Code Man. And, you know, that he referred to it, it was the best job he ever had. And you know, in fact, he was awarded an MBE, you know, for his work, you know, the Master of the British Empire, in 2000 for this. And, look, you know, I can't pretend I knew the man well. I only got to talk with him for 10 minutes or so, but he was this lovely down to earth guy during my time with it. You know, I had this very strong northern accent. And in fact, you know, I remember reading afterwards how, you know, Carrie Fisher, when she was talking about David, we referred to him as Darth Farmer. And it's like, of course, I can see that. But he was just, he was a working actor. He was a, you know, a man who got married in October of 1963 and stayed married to Norma for the rest of his life. And they had three lovely children together. In fact, just today, his daughter Rachel, got sort of filled in the holes about what happened. And her dad, who'd been suffering from Alzheimer's over the last 2 years or so, that's one of the reasons he stepped away from doing the cons, I want to say, back in 2015, 2016. But what happened here, folks, the reason we lost David is 2 weeks ago, he got COVID. And in an interview with the Sun newspaper, Rachel Prowse said, "It's horrible that COVID restrictions meant that we could not get to see him and say goodbye. But when we went to collect his stuff at the hospital, and the nurse said, what a cool guy he was. He was a larger-than-life character, and to be honest, he would have loved to see himself trending on Twitter." So, folks, just to cut to the chase here, wear your masks, all right? I mean, David had to on the set of Star Wars, and the only way he could see out was through his nose. And, you know, we got a great film out of that. And if we all wear our masks, maybe this virus will go away that much faster. So
that would be wonderful.
That would be wonderful. So, and speaking of wonderful, Mr. Z here does a couple of wonderful podcasts. We've got Coffee with Kenobi and the stuff you're doing over on Patreon these days. Can you tell us what you've been up to lately? Or
yeah, thank you. Thanks, by the way, for sharing those stories about David Prowse. I think it's important. I know when Peter Mayhew passed away, you came on Coffee with Kenobi. We spent a lot of time on looking at Lucasfilm talking about him. So these are iconic actors who have a big impact on why you and I met and became friends, because of their impact on Star Wars. So I think it's important. On Coffee with Kenobi, we've been continuing to go through looking at episodes of The Mandalorian in great detail. We had Steve Sansweet on recently, talk about Rancho Obi-Wan and different things going on in merchandising these days. We've certainly got three episodes left, and then we'll be transitioning to a new year, and who knows where the world of Star Wars is going to take us. But we're going to have a lot of interviews for things with the High Republic and a lot of great stuff coming on. So very much looking forward to that. And then on CWK Pour Over, our Coffee with Kenobi Patreon page, we had been talking about different Thanksgiving and Christmas traditions. We're going to go into a top five stories about favorite Christmas movies, favorite Christmas songs, and we're going to give our New Year's resolutions as well, which is a typically really popular show that we do every year.
That sounds really cool. Okay. Definitely sounds like worth stuff we're checking out. Over here at the Jim Hill Media Podcast Network, we've got some fun shows headed your way. Glenn Test and I are starting up a new series of shows for Bandcamp, where we are deep diving into the Joseph Mankiewicz Epcot archive. Joseph was one of the guys that Disney reached out to in 1978 when they were looking for big ideas as they were transitioning from Epcot the city to Epcot the theme park. And Joe saved everything. So we have early Epcot, and it's not the city, but it will still kind of break your heart to find out what fell off the table. Let's see. We also have Fine Tuning with Duke Taylor, the gentleman who I got to talk about animation news and history with. Likewise, just earlier tonight, I recorded a brand new Marvel Us Disney with Aaron Adams, a gentleman who edits a lot of the podcasts here. Should be working on a new Universal joint with Dustin Fuse. I don't know. Did you see the artwork today? The actual photographs today that came out from Super Mario Land for Universal Studios Japan?
No, I haven't. I bet they're...
Go check those out, Dan. I mean, that this is, you know, that we are so obviously in a theme park arms race right now. I mean, you look at what Disney and the Imagineers did with Black Spire Outpost, you know, Star Wars Galaxy's Edge. And when you look at what Universal Creative has done with Super Mario Land, you are stepping into the game. I mean, there's just no other way to describe it. In fact, the thing that's so bizarre about the you know, they had a photograph of the actual land, you know, from like 100 feet up, and you look at it and it's like, that can't be real. You know, that has to be a piece of concept art, and it's not.
Wow.
And the best part is, you know, they haven't officially announced it yet, but they're building the exact same thing at Universal Studios Hollywood. It'll be open for the summer of 2022, provided, of course, Governor Newsom allows any theme park to reopen in California sometime soon. Not that I'm bitter. Let's see. And speaking of things, you go to a theme park, you buy things. And that brings us to the I Want That podcast, which with Shelley Viaduli. And we're working on our Black Friday, Cyber Monday, Christmas shopping edition, which hopefully will be up soon. All right, folks, tell you what, if you could do Dan and I a favor, if you could head over to Apple Podcasts and rate and recommend, you know, both Coffee with Kenobi as well as the show you're listening to right now, Looking at Lucasfilm, that would be incredibly helpful. If you really, really, really like what you heard tonight, you want to head to Bandcamp and subscribe, that would be helpful. And let's see, you know, Dan, honestly, as enjoyable as the podcasts are, the social media stuff is almost as fun. In fact, I was enjoying what you were showing off, your new merch line, the new shirts. And was that, did you shoot that in your backyard? Where did you take the picture?
That's in my backyard. Yeah, sure is.
There we go. Okay, but that was for the pour over show, right? Or
no, that was for Original Stitch. Has some really, really high quality Star Wars customizable dress shirts that they sent me.
Okay. Well, again, it looked really, really nice. And again, backyard didn't look too shabby either. So, but if folks are looking to keep tabs on what you're up to in social media, where can they find you?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter at Mr. Zehr, MrZehr, on Instagram, DanZCWK. And then Coffee with Kenobi is all over social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, and YouTube.
Okay. And Nancy wants me to remind you, as far as our social media, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Jim Hill Media and on Facebook at Jim Hill Media News. And that's going to do it for this week, folks. We've got a few more of these that Dan and I are going to do. So please come back. And till then, thanks for listening. And how do